difference. I'm Richard. I'm a grateful and enthusiastic member of the Al-Anon Family Groups. Hi, Maurice. We welcome you to this meeting of the Al-Anon Family Groups and hope that you will find in this fellowship the help and friendship that we've been privileged to enjoy. We who live or have lived with the problem of alcoholism understand, as perhaps few others can. We too were lonely and frustrated, but in Al-Anon we discover that no situation is really hopeless, and it is possible for us to find contentment and even happiness, whether the alcoholic is still drinking or not. We urge you to try our program. It has helped many of us to find solutions that lead to serenity. So much depends on our own attitudes, and as we learn to place our problem in its true perspective, we find it loses its power to dominate our thoughts and our lives. The family situation is bound to improve as we apply the Al-Anon ideas. Without such spiritual help, living with an alcoholic is too much for most of us. Our thinking becomes distorted by trying to force solutions, and we become irritable and unreasonable without knowing it. The Al-Anon program is based on the suggested 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which we try little by little, one day at a time, to apply to our lives, along with our slogans and the Serenity Prayer. The loving interchange of help among members and daily reading of Al-Anon literature thus make us ready to receive the priceless gift of serenity. Al-Anon is an anonymous fellowship. Everything that is said here in the group meeting and member to member must be held in confidence. Only in this way can we feel free to say what is in our minds and hearts, for this is how we help one another in Al-Anon. What we're going to do is engage in a panel meeting. I don't know how many of you have ever seen a panel meeting. What we have is essentially four 10-minute speakers. We have a theme. We have a piece of literature that I'm going to read that has been following me around for about 4 years. And last year, when we adopted the Journey to Serenity theme for this festival, it really started kicking my butt because it speaks to me about that theme. And so today we're going to have a panel discussion on the stuff that comes out of that. So we're going to have four speakers for about 10 minutes each. Then we'll be throwing it open to questions from the floor for any or all of our panelists. I'm going to invite the panelists to come up and join me now, and I'm going to introduce them briefly so that we don't have to break the momentum later. Besides, this will help me get the speaking order in my head.
Oh, nice
crew. No. Are you sitting down?
I've got that chair.
Here too. Okay. Where do I sit?
I'm not going to hold you.
That's good enough, John. Okay. If I remember correctly, speaking first is the lady on my far left, Larsine G. from Hawthorne, California, who is our keynote speaker for the banquet this evening. Larsine doesn't really know it, but I met her about 4 years ago. I am a speaker tape junkie, and I ran across one of her tapes on the internet and fell in love for reasons that you're going to understand tonight, I believe. Going second was Sharon P. As Sharon just reminded me, she is my spiritual mother-in-law. And a really valued and honored member of three of the groups I attend on a regular basis. Going third is John S., immediately to my left. John, I like to introduce as my favorite living alcoholic. John is a longtime member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and someone whose influence in my life I value on a regular basis. And last but not least is Mary V. Mary is probably the busiest person I know in service. She's just finished a term as DR of District 1, which is the Saskatoon and East. She's currently serving as both the chairperson of the Al-Anon Information Service Office Committee, which also kind of puts her in charge of the Literature Depot. At the same time, she is the area literature coordinator. And anytime that I just, you know, how the subject of somebody comes up, I've just boggled, because it goes back way further than I do, her service resume. And at the same time, she's somebody that someone like me, who gets really obsessed about focusing on the steps and the recovery work. And I can have a good conversation with her. So that's where our panelists came from today. The piece that I would like to share with you before I turn it over to the people who matter today is called A Journey, a Waiting Room, and an Airport Terminal. There once was a man who was sick and tired of being where he was, and he wanted to get out of that place. So he paid the price and did all it took to be able to begin his journey. Because he wanted to fly away to a better place, he went to the terminal and looked at all the posters on the wall, and he found a glimpse of a better place. So he was given the opportunity to go there. The next day, he told himself, he would start. The following morning found him sitting in a waiting room near the entrance, maybe a distance of 12 steps away from the door, and passing the time with other people who were there. One or two had traveled to his special dream place before and spoke of its beauty. But they couldn't really tell the man how to get there because it had been so long for them since they had traveled there and enjoyed the place. Most, like our man, had sat many days near the door but had never made the trip. They sat and talked and found that they had much in common. Some had a good day and shared that. Some had a rotten day and shared that. They all looked forward to being in a better place. Some said they knew how to get there, but the more knowledgeable knew that the route they spoke of would never get anyone to the special place. So they debated the best route, and they got angry, but in the end they made up and hugged, for they were going to make this journey together and wanted decent fellowship. They left the waiting room for just a few minutes to get coffee, but as they visited there, they missed the flight again. Now they were getting frustrated. The next day they showed up even earlier. They shared their frustration. Many couldn't wait. One man said that when he got upset, he visited more and more waiting areas, sometimes three, sometimes four, sometimes even five waiting areas a day. He felt better after those visits, sensing he was really going somewhere now, sensing he was close to a big breakthrough that would put him on a flight. He spoke eloquently, and the others who heard him felt motivated as if they were sky high. But as they sat and listened to each other, the last plane that day left without them again. The next day, the entire bunch was about ready to burst. They were so filled with anxiety. But gradually, they'd become comfortable in their waiting room. Each had his own chair. They saw the familiar faces of fellow would-be travelers. They saw friends sitting in the same place, and they had a coffee server who knew just how they liked it by then. This waiting room for many seemed like home, if not better. They also liked the waiting room because when they talked with other people outside the waiting room who knew what they were up to and saw them doing the same thing every day, those outsiders just criticized them. But they could certainly comfort each other in that waiting room. Only people that had missed as many flights as they had and kept on missing them could possibly understand. But in truth, sitting in that terminal and really getting nowhere along their intended journey, they were getting more and more miserable. Some were so in delusion that they began to imagine that getting up and going to the waiting room was the journey. And indeed, maybe it was better than sitting at home in their frustration at not being on the journey, what with kitchen knives and guns nearby that might be used as instruments to end the frustration. For that's how crazy they were getting. And as they sat about discussing the benefit of having a waiting room to come to, the plane left again. They consoled each other. They felt a bond. So close, yet so very far away. Ultimately, it happened. They gave up hope one by one of ever getting on the flight. But they were willing to live out the rest of their lives in the waiting room. It seemed to be okay to them. They soon came to believe that that would be enough. They decided they didn't need a journey. They didn't need to get out of the place where they were. They just needed the company of fellow non-travelers. They had sat in the waiting room for so long, they thought they were comfortable there. One said, "Better than being at home alone, I'll tell you." Another said, "I feel safe here." Another said, "My wife thinks I'm nuts, but she doesn't understand. She doesn't have a clue. People who have never missed so many opportunities as we have could never understand why it's enough each day for us to sit in the waiting room together. They just don't get it. Actually, I feel sorry for them not having what we have. This is my world. I feel so much better here than I ever felt out there." And the woman at the ticket booth just shook her head, wondering, "What's wrong with these people? Why don't they get on the plane or get out of here? All they have to do is take a few steps." And her friend said, "The waiting room is open to all who want to come. You can't make them leave, and you can't make them take the necessary steps to get where deep inside they'd like to be." And the first lady replied, "But it seems to me that this whole bunch is suffering a terminal illness. Get it? Sitting at the waiting room at the terminal?" "Yeah," her friend said, "I got it. You're a real comedian." "But really," the first lady continued, "this could be the commencement of a great journey." But her friend said, "Well, at least they're alive as long as they're sitting here." And the first lady said, "Do you really think so? Do you think this existence could qualify as a life to anyone looking at it objectively?" And then they both grew silent in that moment. And they looked into the faces of those people sitting there, and behind the forced laughter, and behind the ringing out of the people declaring, "Fine, just fine, thanks, and you?" Behind everything else that seemed to mask the truth, they looked into the eyes of these people and they saw a tremendously sad, deep depression, a longing to make the journey and to get out of this place. But one more time, these people in the waiting room sat and talked and watched as the plane left without them. And the two women then watched as the people stood and held hands, and they watched as the people slowly walked out of the waiting room. And the two ladies knew that the entire bunch would return again to the waiting room tomorrow, and the next day, and the next day. And the two looked at each other for a moment, then they looked down at the floor, and then both women, very quietly, began to cry. What we've asked our panelists to do today is just share with you their experience, strength, and hope on whatever that brings up to them. And with that, I would like to call up our team.
Hi, everybody. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. My name is Larsine.
Hi, Larsine.
Hey, that's cool. When Richard first told me about this panel, and he told me about this little piece of literature, and then he was kind enough to email it to me, I looked at it and read it, and my initial reaction was that of sadness. Especially the end part, and they begin to cry, and then what I've learned to do in these rooms that I think is really important too is I don't have to make snap judgments or decisions right then about how I feel about something or whatever, but it was an opportunity to, think about it. And then I read it again that night, and I read it again three or four other times. And, and there's a lot of different ways for me to look at this. And again, my gratitude to Al-Anon for, the ability to look at things differently today. And rather than sit, because my initial thing was those poor people. And then it was back to, well, what about your time in the waiting room? Because Lord knows I spent enough time in there. I was not a person that came into Al-Anon surrendered. I was definitely waiting room material. I mean, my whole thing was how not to do anything here and seem like I was doing something. And basically, because I think walking into these rooms for anybody, it can be a very scary experience. And while it's a very simple program, the bottom line is you need to change everything about your life. No matter how much, they try and sugarcoat it with other stuff, it's about changing your attitudes and the way that you're thinking. And my personal experience with my time in the waiting room, it's, again, and where that goes to for me, because now I think about, okay, now I have to be on this journey. I have the distinct honor and pleasure and privilege to be on this journey. And what helped me move from the waiting room to the journey part for me? And in actuality, it's the attraction of the people that go to the meetings with me, the people that were in the waiting room with me who made that jump over. And that's why I think it's so important when we talk about, for that I am responsible. When anytime anyone reaches out, let the hand of Al-Anon and Al-Latino always be there. And for that I am responsible. And I'm responsible for putting my hand out to those people in the waiting room. I am not responsible for dragging them, kicking and screaming into the room, which is what I much rather prefer to do. It's way easier on me. And you're going to go anyway, damn it. And so you can come along or not come along, but I'm taking you. And that used to be the deal for me, because it's like, this is how it works, and I'm going to cram it down your throat if it's the last thing I do. And that is not what the journey is about. It's everybody has to get there at their own rate and pace. And again, it was being in that waiting room and hearing that laughter and hearing that recovery. I know how many times I've heard it. The people walk into a room and the first thing they hear is they hear people laughing, and the next thing they think is, I must be in the wrong place, because this can't be where you go after you've been where I've been. This just can't happen. And again, it's that attraction. It's those people that walked before me that showed me. It's those people who said, we're going to this conference. Come with us. We're going for coffee after the meeting. We'd love for you to come. We're going to be doing this and we're doing that. And I don't even know if there was so much as an invitation as an automatic inclusion that made me want to feel a part of and come. And the attraction, watching people laugh and have a good time and then finding out their situation is 10 times worse than mine. And that's the hope that's here. I tell people we have hope by the bucketful. Take home all you want every single day. We've got plenty of it. But, you know, these are the experiences that you have to walk through in order to make that transition. And, again, no one can give it to you on a silver platter. How easy it would be if we could just tell you, you do this and you do this and you do this and you make the journey in. How many times do I still have to go to the waiting room? I mean, it happens to me occasionally when I lose faith, when things I very much care about aren't going my way or people I love are very sick and I'm praying for them to get well and they're not getting well. You know, and I don't understand why my prayers aren't being answered. Sometimes I have to go back out to the waiting room again, you know, and because I have lack of faith. And that's nobody's fault. It's just where I have to go sometimes. And again, one more time, it's the attraction that I hear on the other side of the wall. Come back over, Larson. You know, this is where the answer is. Because out there I am. I'm crying. Most people are crying in the waiting room because there's just such a better deal out there. You know, and I just have a couple little examples I'm going to share with you about the journey and what it's been, you know. And the big deal for me on the journey, too, has absolutely been sponsorship. I've had two sponsors, my entire time in this program, and both of my sponsors have just been just absolute guiding lights for me. You know, they have just taken me through this deal and let me go at my own rate and pace. Nobody's pushing me. Nobody's kicking me in the butt about it, but they show me the way to go. And my very first sponsor, I was very angry when I got here. My very first sponsor was just like the gratitude queen of the flaming universe. And when you're angry, you don't want to hear a lot of grateful, grateful, grateful. And that's all she would ever tell me. And her big thing to say to me, she had a thick Dutch accent, she would be, attitude of gratitude. You need an attitude of gratitude. And so anyway, eventually, and no matter what was going on in my life, she would point out the gratitude part of it. And I have, you know, two sons and a husband, and I'm the only female in my house. So for the women here, you know what my toilet looks like a good part of the time. And one day I got very angry about this because I sit down and I never miss. And therefore, I don't think these guys should be missing. And but again, one more time, my wanting to, you know, have something to be angry about, something to be, you know, to make my life pissy. And so, literally. And so I call, you know, okay, great, this is good. I'm going to call Jeannie and tell her about this and see what she thinks I should be so grateful about. So I call her, okay, this is what I'm doing. I'm cleaning this toilet. I think it sucks. It's not fair, blah, blah, blah. You know, okay, so what? So what's the gratitude in this? And she didn't even hesitate 30 seconds, and she said to me, you should be grateful that all the men in your house have healthy penises. And it was like, okay. You know, I never would have thought of that all by myself, I'm here to tell you. You know, and finally, you know, again, one more time of surrender, her taking me from the waiting room to the journey. Because, see, left to my own devices, I just as soon be pissy about whatever's going on. I will find the negative in what's going on. So I ask her, okay, I give up. What's the gratitude thing about it? And she explained to me my life in a nutshell, pretty much. She told me, you've always had stuff to be grateful for. You've always had a job. You've always had a roof over your head. You know, yeah, you have alcoholism, but you've got healthy children. You know, it's so many things in your life to be grateful for. That you want to take all these things that you have to be grateful for and look for some kind of garbage in it. And she says, I'm here to tell you that you are one of the most resentful people I've ever sponsored over nothing. And what I try to teach you with gratitude is that you can't be grateful and resentful at the same time. It's impossible to do. Okay, so we're done with this conversation because now I'm going to spend the whole day trying to be grateful and resentful at the same time, because one more time, this is how I'm in the waiting room trying to find a way where I don't have to get on the journey, why I am unique and different, and my case is special, and this doesn't apply to me. And I spent the whole day doing that, and no matter how hard I tried, if I was grateful, I could not be resentful. I could not. You know, and pretty much from this day to that, from that little lesson that she gives me, no matter what is going on in my life, and I am talking no matter what devastation, all I hear is Jeannie's voice in the back of my head going, what can you be grateful for here? Because when I go to the grateful side, I'm on on the journey side. I'm out of the waiting room. I'm where I'm supposed to be. I have faith again, even though I don't know that the answers will be what I want. But I know that every time I have given my life over to the care of God, it's come out exactly as it is supposed to be. And I've got to be happy in the journey, too. You know, and that's the deal. Another little quick story I want to share. We're big on, my husband and I are hikers, and not so much the big-time stuff like we used to do, but we did a lot of that. And but see, my husband likes to hike because he likes to look at stuff. I like to hike because I got to touch the wall. We go all the way, we touch the wall, and then we come back because I am very destination-oriented. And he's much more jury-oriented. I mean, we're hiking, and he comes across a pristine lake, and he wants to stay there and take off his shoes and put them in the water and look at the flowers. We got 6 hours till it's dark, buddy. We're moving, you know. I don't care what's going on here. Moses himself could appear, and we're on a schedule, you know. And so anyway, one day we're on this little weenie hike. It's just a 5-miler to this waterfall, and it's not very, you know, it's a pretty easy hike. But it's rainy, and it's crappy, and it's really kind of muggy, and it's a difficult, you know, in that way. And so we touch the wall. We go. The waterfall's dry as a bone. Nothing there. So we're coming back, and then we come across this older man, and he's all dusty and sweaty and crappy, and he's just like, and he comes up to say, how much further is it? You know, and I'm going, oh, you got about another 45 minutes. I'm not going to tell him the waterfall's dry as a bone, because he's like me. He's got to touch the wall. It don't matter. He's got to go. You know, and then maybe 15 minutes later, we come across this other man, same age, you know, and he's kind of come and got his walking stick, and as he passes us, he says, beautiful day for a hike, isn't it? You know, and then my husband turns to me and he goes, first guy, destination oriented. Second guy, jury oriented. Which guy do you want to be? You know, and again, one more time, you know, I don't know who takes you always from the waiting room, you know, into the journey, but the ability to be able to hear that and see that became very, very clear to me about who I want to be and what I want to do. And to me, God puts the people in your life that'll take you from the waiting room onto the journey, you know, if you just reach out, because that's all you have to do is reach out, and hopefully somebody's hand will be there to take you. So thank you for letting me share with you on this.
The cool thing is that if you make a point of being here at the end of the banquet, you get an hour of that.
Tell that to my husband.
And now I'd like to call up a lady I just adore, Sharon P.
Stand up, Sharon.
I am also a little bit of...
Do you want to...
I might be too tall then. Oh, my. I feel like a big people.
Hi, Sharon.
How are you?
I'm going to say... I'm too tall.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Sharon.
Hi, Sharon.
Even though I'm used to that, it still throws me every time. I just nudged Mary. Thank you, Larsine. I just nudged Mary and said, do you want to go next? I don't want to after Larsine's talk. Anyway, it was great. Thanks, Larsine. Richard gave me this tape, months ago, actually, and I listened to it and listened to it and listened to it. And then last week I emailed him and said, so what do you want me to say? Well, anyway, when I was reading this, when Richard was talking today, the thing that stuck out for me the most was, and her friend said, the waiting room is open to all who want to come. You can't make them leave, and you can't make them take the necessary steps to get to where deep inside they'd like to be. And that's the paragraph that stood out for me the most today. Stood out for me the most because that's what it is for me. It's about deep inside, and that's where I had to get in this program, is deep inside. I have to do it from my head first and down. And I don't want you to feel sorry for me, but I just have to say that there's an advantage to coming into this program almost dead. You have no choice. It's a long time ago. It's all good. Everything's great. But for me, it was about staying alive. So, you know, it wasn't that hard to work the steps. It wasn't that hard to do everything I was told to do because it was survival. So there was an advantage to that. sponsorship. I can't say enough for sponsorship when it comes to working the program and being on this journey. I didn't have one sponsor, I had two sponsors, and it was great. I had one gentle one, I had one that had been in the program 33 years. When she said jump, I said, how high, and anything you tell me to do, I will do, no problem. And I did, and it helped. I also had one that, because I was incapable of phoning her, she would call me every day, and that was so great. So I can't talk enough about sponsorship, how important sponsorship is in this program. Now, working the program, I get the same out of sponsoring people or women. Everything that comes out of my mouth, I need to hear. And it is wonderful. It's really great. I couldn't talk much when I first came to the program. I was too shy. But I did hear that God gave me two ears and one mouth for a reason. So that was a good thing. And I learned to listen. That sounds passive, but that was probably my first way of starting to work the program. I sat and listened, and I learned so much from listening. Went to lots of meetings. The waiting room is good too. There's nothing wrong with the waiting room. It's a safe place. I love the waiting room. It's a very safe place for me to come and to launch myself into working the program. The waiting room is where I come and I get fed three times a week, most often. And I get fed by the fellowship of the people. And that gives me the strength to be able to go out and do the things, work the steps, to do my step four, to do my step five. And it's great. I love it. I learned, and this is something I just practice this constantly because I learned it a long time ago, and that was, if it doesn't have my name on it, I don't pick it up. And boy, has that been something for me to learn over the years, and it's given me, and that's not about passivity, that's about learning. And I heard somebody speak, I forget which speaker spoke about how, you know, we have to learn not to take other people's stuff up, and that particular topic led me to both, you know, not to do my own stuff and control people, but also not to take on other people's stuff, and it was great. I guess when I think of step one, I think of, and I stay anchored in 1, 2, and 3. I run out and do everything, but I stay anchored in step 1, 2, and 3. I do step 1 many times a day. I do step 2. And the thing I've learned, I think, out of step 2 is that there is a God or there is a higher power, and I'm not it. And that was a real lesson for me to learn, but it's through working the journey of the program, and that's how I learn the program, is to keep that in mind, that there is a God and I'm not it, and I can do nothing, absolutely nothing, without my higher power. Acceptance, those who I sponsor probably almost hate this word by now. It's a little bit like the attitude of gratitude. Mine's acceptance. If you accept anything, to me, to get to that point of acceptance, and I get to that point of acceptance through working the steps, through doing the slogans, through going to lots of meetings, through journaling, through doing writing a lot, and I get to that point of acceptance, and to me, the whole program really is on acceptance. When I get to that space, and again, I go back to this, the waiting room is open to all who want to come. You can't make them leave, and you can't make them take the necessary steps to get to where deep inside they'd like to be. And deep inside is the acceptance. And that's where I want to be, and I think that's where most people want to be. And it truly is the answer. It is the answer to everything. Doesn't mean that I don't want changes. Doesn't mean I don't change things. But it does mean that at that moment, and I remember going to Montana a couple of years ago to a roundup, and the speaker said, but are you okay this moment? Not one moment from now, but this moment. And of course, the answer is always yes. And to me, that's what acceptance is. Am I okay at this moment? Yes, always at this moment, because I have my higher power. I said I still work the steps 1, 2, and 3. I still work all the steps, but those I keep constantly. I sponsor as many as I can, sometimes more than I can. And I try to do 12-step work. So that's the waiting room, or that's the journey. You know, I've taken the 11 steps, and my 12 steps is to pass it on. And I know I can't pass it on by dragging you. I have tried that. I've tried dragging people. It didn't work. But I can pass it on by inviting. I can pass it on by, hopefully, an example. And the culmination of my journey is step 12, and to hope that as many people as possible will see and like what they see and come in this program, because we don't have to suffer. So that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, she seems nice. I know I'm in trouble when she calls me sweetie. That's when I need to have a look at Richard. What have you been up to? Next, like I said, my favorite living alcoholic. When I was introducing John to Sharon earlier in the day, I told Sharon that the reason we invited him is we wanted to bring up the brat factor. Here's John.
Thank you, Richard. My name's John, and I'm so grateful and full of gratitude to be an alcoholic. Wow. We were talking earlier about looking at this, and I think I've changed my opinion or added things into the equation about 4 different times having read this thing, and started out being a little bit critical, you know, well, how come they're doing this and hanging around, and why don't they just get on the plane and go? I remember my experiences when I convinced a couple of my friends to go into business with me into a fast food franchise in Hawaii, and yep, that's fine. So they let me do all the work and get over there and get set up and invest all the money, and they were going to give theirs later on, and guess what? They never showed up. They're still in the waiting room, and like that was 30 years ago, okay? So I know what it's like to be sitting there waiting, and I've been waiting for them ever since to show up, but here we are, and that's when I was sober doing this, okay? So you can imagine some of the deals I got into when I was drinking. But anyway, initially when I looked at it, I didn't feel too uplifted when I read it. I actually felt quite bad for these folks because there really wasn't anything happening. And then in my role, I started looking at this guy and seeing, kind of analyze him, you know, and how come he just stayed there and he was sick and tired of what he was doing, but, you know, just get out of that place. And I realize now that, it's a state of mind that we're in. I know from my experience, it's not, like I was asking the question, why was he leaving? He was going to another location. Well, he was sick and tired and he paid the price to go to this new place, but it never really said what the price was. So I found, you know, through AA and through you folks that I have to accept where I am and move on from that point rather than blaming the circumstances or situations as to why I'm there. And that's why the program, has such an ability to change one's person. You come here under condemnation and fear and guilt, and so then you begin dealing with the physical aspect of it and the mental aspect of it and the spiritual aspect of it and getting rid of all that stuff, and you can start living your life and encouraging other people. And I guess when I first looked at that, that's where I was coming from. Like, what could a person do to encourage those folks to, you know, to get on the plane, get going? Because initially it says there's only 12 steps, right, to that door. And that's what I'm looking at. Naturally, it came up right away about doing the 12 steps. And, well, the way you get to the door on the plane is just one step at a time, basically. That's as simple as it is. So we have to accept where we are, but yet still be motivated to change. And that's what I know the 12 steps have done in this regard for my life. Is it's, you know, when you get the one under your belt, you feel so good, and you take a rest for a while in the waiting room, and then get on to the next one. And before you know it, you're out there and helping other people achieve the same contentment and serenity and sobriety that you got. And I found, you know, over the course of the years, the only way to do that, of course, is by giving it away and encouraging other people, because then your reservoir gets bigger and is more encouraged. And also one thing I looked at when I was reading this is I got the impression apparently he didn't know exactly where he was going, you know, because he looked at some posters and decided he had to get out of there. So in real life, we've got to do more than just look at a few posters and decide, you know, we want to move someplace. We have to be more committed than that, not just get a glimpse of it. So if there's just all talk and no acts and no plan, you know, we just sit around. And I hope I'm not appearing to be critical in this. These are just my own life's experiences that I have that has happened to me, because I've been parked for quite a while sometimes, and maybe that's why I felt sad about this when I looked at it, because I could see myself in it. But by hanging around with winners like that are in this room today, one does get the encouragement to get out there and make the change rather than just, you know, sitting around. And I'm sure like that story is such a good one, because I think we can all see ourselves in it at one time or another. You know, now the stays in that room are a little shorter than what they were originally, because you know, my faith has in the program and in God and in myself has changed as a result of the benefits of doing the steps and the encouragement that you folks give to people like this. So it's only 12 steps the door to, you know, get out in the runway and get at it. I could see the influence of others in a negative fashion with regards to it, because it was basically all talk and no action. I can claim pretty good title to that in a lot of areas, and hopefully it's less than what it was initially. And what I saw also, there were some of us, you know, years ago, there was a bunch of us that came into the program together, 8 or 9 of us, and fortunately, most of us are still around. And we seem to love the, I'm not going to say competition, but when one of those guys would get a step up on us, the rest of us, well, we can't let that jerk, you know. I mean, he's done 4. What are we doing sitting here, you know? So there, all of a sudden, there'd be a rush to get 4 done, you know. But I can see the camaraderie and the fellowship and how exciting that was to get those steps done, because some of you know Dennis M. Well, there's no way that guy was going to get ahead of this guy, you know. So anyway, it was fun. So as a result, all these years later, we're still hanging out and still there. So I'd rather get on the runway than be on the waiting room. So that's what I think we should call it, a departing room or something, and get out of there. But if we don't couple our action, you know, take what we've learned and couple it with faith to get the job done, you know, it just doesn't get done. As I look and see the bad example that we set for those people that are observing us or looking at us, you know, like those two ladies that all they could do was put their head down and you know, cry at the end. It's I hope that our lives are more of an exciting testimony than that, you know, that that they do see action and excitement and laughter and joy, because that's what these rooms have done. I know before getting here, it wasn't like that for me. It was pretty sad, but you know, those first few meetings felt very uncomfortable, because everybody seemed to, they didn't, how could I relate to them? They're all happy and joking and laughing. And some had, you know, suits on, some had jeans, but they all had peace of mind, and that's what I was after. So it's up to us to you know, to take the steps that are necessary to get on board and get the job done. So, like, to me now, it's not about it's about the trip, of course, but it's based on one's faith in God and not the fear of alcohol, is what I had initially. I mean, the fear of the booze and what it was doing to the mind, the body, it isn't very pleasant. So now it's more of a faith-motivated life that we have versus one that's based on what fear is going to do, or looking over your shoulder, whether it be at a banker or a policeman or a wife or a lawyer or whatever. You know, it's that's what it's based on. It's the total opposite, and you folks, you know, have done this for us. So I've always defined fear as false evidence appearing real. You know, it's something that's up there in my mind that just keeps coming at me, and yet when I face it head on, it gets over with, you know, whether it be CRA or IRS or whatever it is. You know, it's just face it and get on with it. You know, this program, a day at a time, you know, cannot be taken from us in that regard, and it'll get dealt with. with. I know in the beginning, as I looked beyond myself, I discovered that I go further and achieve more when others join me on the trip, like in the room. And then when I got going, I want to take everybody with me. Well, that's kind of impossible. So it didn't take long for me to figure out that this was a mistake, you know, wanting to take everybody with me. Because there's three things that popped up as I was going over this, that not everybody wants to take the trip with you. Like they don't have the passion, you know, to go on that trip. So you can't really talk them into it. They've got to be motivated from within. We can encourage them. And but if you try and take people on the trip that don't want to go, they really wear you out, you know. And you'll be hiking for miles before you know what's going on, you know. And also, they got to have a proper attitude, because if they don't believe you know, in what you're doing, if they don't believe in what you're doing, don't try and take them with you, because it just won't happen. I agree with my wife all the time. Like, there's no problem. Just, you know, just tell me what to do, and we'll get it done. This way, this is supposed to be funny, Richard. Like. That one didn't go over too good, but anyway, I just go with her, whatever she wants, you know. So the attitude's right, I've accepted that. And also the ability. Not everybody, you know, can take the trip. So we can't afford to partner with people, like, who aren't fit to take it. It's their attitude towards things. So I guess the bottom line is, it's up to us and our responsibility to make it happen. Matter of fact, on this pen I got here, I always carry it with me, it says on here, if it's going to be, it's up to me. Well, not me alone, because it's my faith in God that keeps me going too. So, but if it's up to me, if it's going to be, it's up to me. I can't rely on somebody else to give me that happiness. If it comes, that's great. I'm full of gratitude for it when it does come. But it's you know, we just can't afford to rent space in our heads and our hearts to people that deter and bring us down in that regard. So I suppose to summarize it up, that in the first three steps, what it does is we abandon ourselves to God as we understand Him. And then in the next three steps, we admit our faults to Him and to our fellow man, and get all that garbage of the past cleaned out. We clear away the wreckage of the past in steps 8 and 9. And then in 10, 11, and 12, we give freely to others, you know, what we have received in this. And to me, that's the fuel or the momentum, you know, that just keeps us flying, keeps us on the runway. I know I don't get parked as often as I used to when we're out there, you know, sharing the excitement and joy of sobriety and encouraging people. So, you know, we've got to have an action plan that we can follow and focus on the future rather than the things of the past. And from what I picked up from the story, there was a lot of time spent dwelling on the things of the past versus the trip ahead. You know, they weren't excited. The vision wasn't there. It was more dwelling on the things of the past. So I honestly didn't even know what faith was when I first, you know, came into this program, that's for sure. But now, you know, it's fun to step out in faith and walk as your fellow man and have God just keep you trucking while you're doing it. So that's my understanding of it. Thanks very much, Rich.
I tease John a lot. yeah, a lot. But I think you got a sense of why he holds a special place in my heart. I mean, somebody who's been around that fellowship for quite a while and still evidences that kind of passion is special to me. On that same vein, I want to call Mary up.
Thank you, Richard. Good afternoon. My name is Mary V, and I'm a very grateful and enthusiastic member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Mary!
I love that. And I want to thank Richard and his committee for inviting me onto the panel. I, like John, when I read this, thought, what the heck is this about? You know, like, how depressing. And I thought, I'm going to get up here and not have a thing to say about this, because this does not apply to me at all. And then, as Sharon said, you know, we've been given the time to look at things more than once in different ways. And I realized that it very much applies to how my journey in Al-Anon has been. because when I came into the program, I thought that was my destination. I thought that by coming through the doors, my life was going to be all made better. I was very naive, and that's okay, because growing through the program in the waiting room is what I needed to do. I stayed in the waiting room for many, many years before I understood that every time I looked at a new poster, a new place to go, that also applied to me. The journeys I've taken within the fellowship have given me acceptance and gratitude and open-mindedness. And those are three things that I had basically no use for when I was 25 years old, when I came into the program. I didn't know what they meant when I was 25 years old. I mean, who does? The people who were on the way out of the waiting room, the one who had decided how they were going to reach their destination, are the ones that I remember in my journey. They're the ones who turned back to me and said, "Come on, Mary, I'll show you the way I went. You know, you don't have to stumble over there. You can choose a different path. You can go through the turnstile. You don't have to climb under it." And that, for me, was a lot of my life, was trying to find an easier way to go. No, I didn't want to follow everybody else. I wanted to find my own way. And I thought my way would always be the easier, the right way. Turned out, 9 times out of 10, mine was the harder, wrong way. And it took me a long, long time. I must be a slow learner, because I think I was in many, many Al-Anon meetings and groups for probably 10 or 15 years before I finally started getting it. You know, there's only so many times you can run up to a plate glass window and not get through it before you start looking for the door. And that's what I used to do. I would see the destination, and I would go for it. And it didn't matter what was in between me and that destination. I would either run over it, dodge around it, or smack right into it. And I spent many years hurting emotionally and beating myself up because I was too dumb to get this simple program. Everybody says, "Oh, it's such a simple program." Well, yeah, once you get it, it's really simple. But for some of us, I didn't understand. I just really didn't understand. I don't know if it was self-centeredness or some lack in my ability to take things in a reasonable manner and make sense of them. I had no faith. I had no faith in a higher power. I had no faith in myself. I had no faith in human beings when I came in. But by those people who turned around and held their hands out to me, I saw a higher power in my life. Because they were able to do things with grace and dignity that I was struggling and fighting to do. They were living lives that weren't perfect, but they were happy, and they were in mostly healthy relationships. They were able to come into a room full of strangers and share in a way that I thought they were all lying at first, because I thought, oh, nobody can be that honest. You know, if I was ever that honest, you'd get up and run out of the room. You don't want to hear my truth. That was what my waiting rooms were like for a long, long time. I would see people coming through on their journey and wonder how, you know, like it looks like they're cruising. It just looks like everything's coming so easy for them. And I wanted it to be that easy for me. And of course it wasn't at first. But when I started really, as Richard said earlier, getting serious about the steps in the program and understanding how to apply them to my life every day. And I said earlier today that these aren't, I'll just do this step today and that step next week. I have to do all the steps every day several times because they apply to every part of my life. So that's me getting through the turnstile. Now I'm in the loading area. Out of the waiting room, into the loading area. And that's also when I was introduced to service in the program. Now, Richard calls it being very busy. I don't. Doing service in this program is the most energizing thing I have ever done in my life. And I never, ever don't have time for it. I get tired at assemblies and think I'm never coming here again, and I hate Asket Basket and rah, 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 rah. But, you know, I see those other faces around the table. They're just as tired as I am. They're just as frustrated over certain issues as I am, but we love each other, and we're there to support each other, and we're there because our fellowship needs that part of Al-Anon. And I imagine it would be the same for AA. My husband's in Regina today at an AA assembly. And if anybody who knows my husband, you'd never think he would have a heart for service, but he does. And we both express it in different ways. But back to me. Because it is all about me, you know. One of the journeys I have taken within Al-Anon is attending some adult child meetings. I'm not a child of alcoholics. It was never an issue in my home growing up. However, I have children who were raised in an alcoholic home. I have a child who was raised during active alcoholism. I have a child who was raised in recovery. Both these children are still damaged by the family dis-ease, and I call it dis-ease, of alcoholism. They have different problems, different issues, and I was not relating well to them at all. And I thought, well, I need to learn. I need to learn what it is that I'm not doing right. Perhaps these adult children can give me a clue. And they did. They opened some huge windows for me in how to validate my children's lives. Just because I don't remember something the way my 40-year-old daughter remembers it doesn't mean her memories are wrong. And that's where I was. That was my journey then with her. Was, oh, no, that didn't really happen. You know, you must be mistaken. I don't remember it that way. A lot of the things she talks about, I do not remember it happening that way. But that's okay. Because I've learned through my fellowship with the adult children groups and the studies that we did that it's okay that we don't have exactly the same perceptions of what went on. So that's another little loading area for me. Now, I am out of time, and I'm going to quit there because I don't want to take up the panel discussion. I just really appreciate Richard for sending that to me. I appreciate the program for teaching me how to look at things like that and see myself in them. So thank you very much.
It's funny that Mary should talk about those differing perceptions. She talked about Asket Basket. You know, I know from serving on the Area World Service Committee that, you know, we do the evaluations after an assembly, and that's usually one of the top two things that the attendees at an assembly like. And then there's those of us that have to actually do it. That's a little different. So at this point, what we'll do is we'll, if we have time for a couple of quick questions, if anybody has a question for the panel in general or for a specific member, feel free to shout it out. If we don't come up with any questions, we'll close. But any questions? Not looking good for questions.
I'll ask a question.
Oh, Ian's got a question.
And maybe you've already answered this, but you know, some of the meetings we go to, there are a lot of people. I'll talk about two areas where I think we need some help in the program. One of them is finding people to volunteer for sponsorship. Right? How do we encourage people to do that? And it's kind of like getting out of the waiting room and going on that journey. The other one is, in different meetings, we run into people who come back for years and just stay in the waiting room. And you really want to grab them by the hand and pull them on the journey. And you wish you could. You really wish you could. And I always hear people talking about, well, you know, we can be too kind to them by not giving them a push. And other people say, no, you never give anyone a push. Anybody who wants to answer that, either of those, I'd like to hear.
That doesn't surprise me.
Well, I have an opinion about everything. As I was saying when I was talking about my time in the waiting rooms, the people I remember, the people who were the real leaders and mentors and, in a way, sponsors to me, were the people who turned around and held out their hand to me. Had they gotten behind me and tried to push me anywhere, I would have been out the door. That's just me. That's just the way I'm built. But I've never met anybody who is successful living this program who was pushed into it. And we have to be patient with people. If it's their higher power's will that they grab the program and run with it, they will do that. We'll have to try to keep up with them. Be patient, be loving, be accepting. That's my answer to that question.
It is a program of attraction rather than promotion, and I know that once a person makes the commitment to get a sponsor, I know in the era I was brought up in, God help them, that's all I can say, because you couldn't get rid of the guy after that. I mean, he was on your case, and you were sitting on his couch on Sunday night, you know, visiting or after a meeting or whatever. It was you wanted what they had, and you were just willing to go any length to get it, you know. But it is attraction rather than promotion. When I see qualities in other people now, even after being sober all these years, whether in our field of endeavor or sobriety or whatever, you know, I want to get to know them. I want to get close to them, and I'm drawn to them, and I ask them for the help. And I know that in not any one case in all these years has that been refused. Anybody that genuinely is seeking a better way of life, I've never run into anybody in the program that isn't willing to share that with them if they want to do it. So keep attracting rather than promoting. And once you've been attracted to a sponsor, I know I've got a couple of kicks in the butt once I made the commitment, but it's once you made the commitment that it happens.
Anybody else? Okay, well, with that, we'll close. And in closing, I'd like to remind you that the opinions expressed here are strictly those of the person who gave them. Take what you like and leave the rest. The things you heard were spoken in confidence and should be treated as confidential. Keep them within the walls of this room and the confines of your mind. A few special words to those of you who haven't been with us long. Whatever your problems, there are those among us who have had them too. If you try to keep an open mind, you'll find help. You'll come to realize that there's no situation too difficult to be bettered, no unhappiness too great to be lessened. We aren't perfect. The welcome we give you may not show the warmth we have in our hearts for you. After a while, you'll discover that though you may not like all of us, you'll love us in a very special way, the same way we already love you. Talk to each other, reason things out with someone else, but let there be no gossip or criticism of one another. Instead, let the understanding, the love, and the peace of the program grow in you one day at a time. For those who care to, please join us in the Serenity Prayer. Back there.
God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back. It works if you work it, and you're working.
Oh, shit. Thank you.
I'm going to tell a joke here. Okay, heard at last year's festival. If you come to Al-Anon looking for a relationship, you must remember that the odds are good, but that the goods are odd. Just a reminder, we have a half an hour break. We'll resume again at 3 o'clock. And there will be literature sales taking place at the back, as well as get your tickets for the raffle. Have a good break, everyone.